thank you for joining me today in Coffee with Dion.
Thanks for the invite, Dion.
Thank you. And today we went to Hardware Lane in Melbourne.
Yep.
And I was intending to give you a taste of another coffee, which is but they didn't actually offer it. So we instead opted for the traditional Vietnamese drip coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what it is for the listeners out there is the Vietnamese use a metallic filter, which they pack the coffee in very tightly.
Yep.
And then they pour hot water into it, and then it just drips down. So most Vietnamese would like to, it's almost like a competition, really. They try to make it so that the drip goes very slow, because if it goes very fast, it's just, it wasn't done properly. in a sense, you can really put any type of coffee in it, but for the I suppose you can call it the snobby Vietnamese people, they only go for traditional Vietnamese coffee from Vietnam.
Yep.
Now, interestingly, did you know that Vietnam is the second largest coffee exporter in the world?
Second biggest producer as well, after Brazil. Ooh. Yeah, according to Wikipedia anyway, they overtook Colombia in 1999. There you go.
there you go. It's very, very little known, and it's kind of funny because it's actually not listed on any coffee products, which is quite funny.
Yes, quite a lot, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that's one of the things together. If you guys want to check it out on the videos, you can see it there. But we're going to now chat about the finance side. So thank you very much there.
Yep.
Now, Andrew, we've known each other for a long time.
Yeah, long time, yes.
Long time. So I started out as a credit assessor at Citibank. And you at the time... owned a what we call a sub aggregator called Members First.
Yep, that was at Plan Australia. Yes, I had a sub aggregation business called Members First that was sub aggregating through Plan Australia. And I sold that in 2011. And then in 2012, me and Mari Borg, we kind of got together. Mario at the time had also sold his business, Mortgage Achievers at the time. And I think it was after a game of golf, and we were having a few beers afterwards, and we were discussing, there's only so much beer you can drink, golf you can play. Yeah. What do we do after you sell two successful businesses? And I guess a long story short is we both decided that, hey, why don't we leverage off the experience and the knowledge that we both had and look at how we can possibly give back to the mortgage industry. And at the same time, the MFW had just introduced the mentoring program for new-to-industry mortgage brokers. And that's when we started Masters Broker Group. And that was the genesis of Masters Broker Group.
And so just to take the audience back in time a bit. So prior to that time, there was no requirements basically for a finance broker entering into the industry to be under any sort of mentorship.
Yes, that's right.
So more once you got your accreditation, so your minimum certificate for in mortgage broking and your relevant accreditations and insurance, you can pretty much operate as a mortgage broker.
Exactly. Once you've got all that stuff, you're off to save the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You are. And obviously what the industry body saw was that was not always the best thing to happen. As a result, you guys were one of the first to come to the market to hold the hands of the newbies to make sure that they are a successful business.
Yeah, we weren't the first, I think, but we were certainly one of the early adopters of the mentoring program. And so we both set up the business to mentor new to industry brokers, bring them into the industry, teach them all the compliance stuff. Where we were a little bit different in terms of our point of difference was we just didn't just concentrate on how to write a home loan, but we focused also on the business side of things, like the marketing, how do you generate, get customers, how do you, put all that stuff together. Because without any customers, you have no business. And essentially every new to industry mortgage broker is a small business person. So, and that I felt was lacking as well, because with the influx of mortgage brokers coming in the industry, and if you look at all the FBAA and the MFAA statistics, the majority of mortgage brokers who started out prior to then would fail in the first 5 years. And mostly because they did not have a marketing plan, you know, or business plan. Some of them were lacking. And so, yeah, we felt that was a missing piece. And so that's where we focus on, as well as the technical side of mortgage broking.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, obviously, I run a group of a social media group for finance brokers in Australia. And essentially to help brokers look after each other as well. But obviously, one of the things that came that is quite salient in that group is the fact that there's almost like a little gap in the market for mentorship, in a sense where once you've finished your 2 years of required mentorship, most people don't know what to do.
So that's absolutely true. And that's where Mario and I were discussing this a few years ago as well. And last year we felt like started putting a few pieces together. We say, okay, what happens? What's the next step after you finish the 2 years? So we started putting elements of a coaching program together for existing mortgage brokers, where we start talking about the next step. Okay, you know, how do you evolve from a newbie or so-called new to industry broker? How do you grow? And once you say you know everything about mortgage broking, though you can never know everything about mortgage broking, what's the next step? How do you grow the business? Or, you know, do you hire someone? Do you outsource the back office? You know, how do you leverage off the information that you have? And we started building it in terms of, okay, what else? It's not just about the mortgage broking business. In terms of our coaching, we talk about the personal growth as well. What's important to you as a person? How do you grow as a person? And we also talk about maybe, you know, from a financial perspective, how do you generate wealth in your personal outside the business? What do you do with that money? Do you go and grow assets? And what's the long-term goal? So we look at it from a holistic point of view as well, because that's what both me and Mario do personally in our own, not just in our business, but also in terms of what we do from an investment perspective. Mario does a lot of stuff in property. I do a little bit of property. Most of my stuff is in the share market. So yeah, we give our brokers the benefit of both our experiences going past the new to industry stage.
There you go. Well, thank you very much. And I wish you and Mario all the best for that, because I think, you know, you've identified some of the market that is, I'll be honest, is needed. Because really, at the end of the day, is whether, even if you're an established business, you still need, to me, in my opinion anyway, you need a mentor or you need a coach to hold you accountable.
Exactly. And that's the key, isn't it? I mean, even I need to hold myself accountable by getting Mario to hold me accountable. You know, that's what we do to each other, we bounce it off each other. And yes, you need someone, everyone of us needs a boss of some sort to make sure that we keep pushing. And that's how you grow and how you become even more successful. And eventually you get there. Perfect. Yeah.
Thanks. So it's recording. Okay. Hi everyone, and welcome to this little edition of Coffee with Dion. I'm with a very special guest, Michael Budge. Michael, I've known you actually since the inception of Finance and Coffee.
Pretty much.
Because before that, I had not met you before. I've been in the BDM game for over a decade by that point, and somehow I never come across you. But then I started Finance and Coffee, and then
here we are.
So you've been at pretty much every one of my events in Victoria.
Oh, that would be all right.
So thank you very much for that.
It's okay.
But obviously something happened recently last year, and then we'll go into that later on. Anyway, let's quickly go back. You're a broker.
Yes.
So tell me about your evolution of the broker.
I started working for a company called Mortgage House. They used to be quite big in Melbourne. They're a lot bigger in Sydney. They almost don't exist in Melbourne these days. And I had a franchise in Elsternwick. But my wife moved up to Sydney, so I got out of the franchise and moved up to Sydney.
Yep.
I started working there for a company called Lease Choice. They did asset finance. As it turns out, they changed their name. They used to be a company called Poppy Management Systems, and in my days working for Xerox and similar other places, a lot of the equipment was sold under finance, and these people did finance for me. And when I arrived in Sydney, I sent my resume off to a few mortgage places, and I sent it off to this Lease Choice, and I thought, oh, this won't go anywhere. And the managing director rang me, and he and I had quite a good relationship many years ago. And I said to him, how come you're ringing me? I said, you and I haven't seen each other for 6 or 7 years. And he said, I'm looking at your resume. And I said, gosh, how could I have been that stupid? So, of course, walked in and didn't walk out with a job. And I was with them for a few years. Now they got taken over by First Folio, stroke eChoice. They've since been sold back to the original owner, a bit like Alan Bond or Channel 9 minus a few noughts. I moved back to Melbourne, and I started working for eChoice as a broker myself.
But I've known you more as an asset finance specialist, and is that how that happened in Sydney?
That's correct, yes.
Right,
yes,
okay. So my you know, obviously, as you know, I'm the state manager of Valiant as well, in Victoria. And we do the asset finance stuff, but part of that I didn't touch asset finance. I didn't know anything about business lending as well.
Well, so, a lot of brokers don't do it. They just do their mortgages, and I do quite a bit of business with brokers, and they just say, Michael, you handle this. Which I think is a bit silly, but because they're leaving money on the table effectively.
Well, but at the end of the day, you can't be a jack of all trades.
Oh, that's true, yes. So, I guess you stick to your strengths and that sort of thing.
And what you've built in terms of what I understand is a reputation of a very nice guy. And that's what people trust you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, that's true.
So it comes...
The mortgage brokers do give me their business, but I never, ever go near their mortgage clients.
Yep.
If they talk to me about a mortgage, I say, go back to your broker,
the
original broker.
That at the end of the day, any referral in any industry, to be honest, if there is no trust, you're not going to get that repeat referral, right? It can become so many ways. So either it's the fact that someone's handed you a client and you've fulfilled that need, but at the same time, is there a referral, is there a comms split, so forth, and that also needs to be done correctly. And that's how you get to be you are and the nice guy that you are.
Thank you.
So, but going away from the finance side, this is pretty much where I would like to talk more about this conversation. What happened to you last year?
Last year on the 17th of April, I had a pretty serious heart attack. I was going out for dinner and I didn't make it. My partner rang me and I didn't answer the phone, and she waited half an hour and rang me again, and a nurse in the emergency department at Cabrini answered the phone. So that was a bit of a cause of a few problems.
I believe that was a day after our whiskey tasting event.
That would be very close to it, actually. Very close. It was the Thursday before Easter or Wednesday before Easter, something like that.
Okay, yeah, the whiskey tasting event was a Monday, so I'm very glad I didn't was not caused to that.
No.
But
yeah, I was taking the Greenie. They tried to put a stent in me, but there was too much fatty tissue in there, so they ripped the vein out of my leg and did a double bypass.
Wow.
And next day they transferred me to Cabrini, the Alfred, rather. I was in intensive care for 6 weeks. When I came out of intensive care, I couldn't point to letters on an alphabet board to communicate. That's how bad I was. They transferred me to the cardiac ward, and I was there in total for 3.5 months.
Yeah.
And eventually, I started to get my strength back, and the physio would come in every day and make me walk around the wards, etc. I was discharged to Caulfield Rehab Hospital, did a bit of rehab, and then went home. But that's sort of when the problem started. After a while, I got breathless. I couldn't walk from room to room without getting breathless. I couldn't wash myself in the shower without getting breathless. And in the end, I couldn't sleep at night. Just my breathing was very low. Anyway, I put myself back in hospital and said, fix me. So they introduced me to a gentleman called Professor Tony Walton. what my problem was is that my heart was leaking blood back into my lungs. Fluid on my lungs, of course, is just deadly.
Wow.
So he said to me, I can perform this operation. It's called a MitraClip procedure. And they go in through your groin and up into your heart, and they insert these little clothes peg-like devices that clip the valves of your heart together.
Wow.
So he told me about this, and I said, when can you do it?
Yeah.
He said, it'll take me a week to organise. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was done a week later. When I woke up, I felt better. And 5 days later, I went home. I've never looked back.
Amazing.
So it stopped the flow of blood leaking into my lungs.
Yep.
I'm also on a fluid restriction, so that's, you know, I'm only allowed to have 1.5 litres of fluid a day.
Right, okay. So you're not going to come to my next whiskey tasting event, obviously?
I haven't had a drink since the heart attack. Oh, I've had a couple of champagnes on Christmas Day when I found out I was going to be a grandfather. But
congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah. But other than that, no, I haven't had a drink. I've also found it recently my kidneys are only operating at about 30% capacity.
Oh my God.
And I must admit, I thought, well, that's a pretty low number. But yeah. My kidney specialist said, no, some people go through life operating on one kidney. She said, if they get to 50%, yes, then we're in trouble. But, but at this stage, as far as I'm aware, they're operating perfectly.
Okay.
But since the operation, I've become a little bit of a poster boy for this MitraClip therapy.
Yes.
A while ago, I went to Canberra at the invitation of Abbott Health, who make the device, and I spoke to a group of parliamentarians and health department people and doctors about my experience, because Abbott Health, this operation is not on the pharmaceutical benefit scheme.
Yes.
And if I want to...
I'm going to hope that that doesn't affect the sound, so I do apologise. Right. We are live in an actual cafe on the Grave Street, so it can be pretty busy. Yeah.
So this operation is not covered by the pharmaceutical benefit scheme, and I had it done at the Alfred. If I had it done at Cabrini or at the Epworth, it would have cost $35,000. It cost me nothing.
Wow.
And I've got about $70,000 worth of stuff inside me. I've got a defibrillator as well, which is about $35,000 worth.
Wow.
You're
a walking cyborg.
Well, not quite the $6 million man, but almost.
Well, in the 80s or so, 70s, when it would be pretty much $1 million worth of tech in you
Anyway, it takes a long time for the decision to go through the health department and whatever, and it could still get to the health minister and be knocked on the head.
Yep.
But they wanted to organise some extra publicity, and I appeared on TV last Saturday in an interview just about my experience. They interviewed me, and they interviewed Professor Walton, and there was a small little news clip on Channel 10.
There we go.
In fact, in about 2 weeks' time, I'm going to Canberra again to address a convention of doctors and parliamentarians and health department people again to talk about my experience. So,
wow. You become a celebrity.
Well, I'm not a celebrity, but look, I'm happy to. I mean, they cover all the expenses and all that sort of thing. But I mean, I think they've been wonderful to me. It's something that's given me an absolute new lease on life.
Yeah. I think it's just an amazing procedure in the first place.
It is.
I mean, it is something that's on your heart, but yet you recovered so quickly.
Yeah, that's right.
With minimal invasiveness.
Yeah. Right. Spreads from a groin. I hardly even knew it was happening.
Yeah. That's amazing.
I guess the lesson from all this is that one has to look after one's health. I was on blood pressure and cholesterol tablets, which I didn't take with the greatest of regularity.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit overweight.
I didn't notice that, actually. The only time I did notice a big change in you was when I saw you in the hospital. So there was a drastic difference between the Michael I saw on that Monday night versus the Michael that I saw in hospital.
Yes. Well, it was... a big change, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And when you spend 6 weeks in intensive care, I've also lost 25 kilos.
Wow.
Having to go and buy myself a new wardrobe almost.
There you go.
So it has had some benefits, but that is a hell of a way to lose weight.
It is, but it also has recentered your thinking in terms of how you look after yourself.
It has, yes. Yeah. Look, I'm a lot more careful with what I eat and drink and how much I eat and drink. I have to weigh myself every day.
Yes.
In fact, when I came home, I started to put on a little bit of weight, and I thought that was just good, healthy food. But my cardiologist said, no, it's fluid. Get it off. And I guess the more weight I carry, the harder my heart has to work.
It's sort of amazing, because, I mean, I didn't go through a drastic event like you. I did end up in hospital, I think it was like Christmas Eve, about 3 years ago, because they thought something, I was about to have a heart attack. All the tests came out negative, obviously, at the end, and I didn't end up any medication or whatever, but it has changed me somewhat in terms of what I eat. Even exercise. I didn't exercise at all until I had that event.
Well, I have to walk 30 minutes every day. That's what I mean.
I don't walk. I tried running, but I just could not be dedicated enough. So now I do a bit of yoga.
Yeah, but you just don't know what happens. I've got a friend of mine who was a mortgage broker. I used to work with his step's wife many years ago, and he was a big man, and he was a bit overweight, and he had some heart palpitations one Friday. His wife took him to hospital, they did some tests over the weekend. Monday morning they said, no, look, all good, you're free to go. He and his wife went shopping, came home, sat him down on the couch, and said, oh my God, here we go again, and that was the end of it. So in many ways, on day one, my family were told I had a 20% chance of survival. And that went up and down in the first few days. So I reckon I'm doing pretty good to be where I am nowadays.
Absolutely, I'm so glad you're still around, being my friend, and taking part in this oddly weird interview in the middle of Melbourne. But how can the finance community help you spread the message?
Oh, look, I think you've just got to be aware. You've just got to look after yourself at the end. If you're a little bit overweight, watch what you eat, watch what you drink. Do a little bit of exercise. Be sensible. Look after yourself. That's all I can say.
Easier said than done.
And if your doctor tells you to take tablets, take them.
I can tell you the amount of tablets I take, but that's more about the health side. It's not medicated, it's just more vitamins and all that jazz.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. That's probably very good.
But during work hours, I'm a bit naughty. I eat what I want. McDonald's.
But Dean, there's nothing of you. You can eat what you want.
Yes, but I'm probably clogging up inside. No one sees that. But anyway, Michael, thank you so much for taking part in this work interview. I wish you all the best.
Thank you,
Dan. Hopefully the conversation in Parliament goes the right way.
Thank you, I'm sure it will.
Because obviously, I can't remember what the number is, but with regards to cardiology, in terms of people having heart problems, is actually quite a leading cause of death.
Oh, it is, yes. Yeah. No question. Well, a friend of mine years ago, slim, fit, 52, had a heart attack, dead by the time he hit the floor, so...
Just as a segue, just before I close off on this, for you guys who are brokers, when you do obviously look at an application for a customer, please also consider getting them correctly insured.
Indeed.
Now, the CBA recently sent me an email, because I am a CBA customer, so this is not a plug for the CBA, but they gave they've given their homeowners a free premium.
Yes. Yep.
In case of death, but either way, so if you are not a broker and you are getting a mortgage for the first time, second time or whatever, please think of your family, because what will happen if something happens to one of you?
The gentleman I said was 52 who died, his wife, he was very well covered with insurance. His wife has quite a nice lifestyle as a result of this. If he didn't have that insurance, she would have been in serious trouble.
Anyway, enough the more talk. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you, Ian.
Hope to come to see you soon in the next event.
Thank you,
guys. Bye.